the vital way. Where ancient wisdom meets the cutting edge to optimize your vitality and performance. There are no right ways, just better ways.
Welcome to the Vital Way Podcast. I'm Logan Christopher from Lost Empire Herbs and Legendary Strength, and have another exciting call for you today. Definitely a big proponent of nature and doing natural things and learning to listen to your body. And the flip side of that is looking at numbers is very helpful, very useful. You know, doing biohacking, being able to see quantified results, there's something very special about that. And ultimately, I think the best results come from really blending these two different approaches together. So joining me today, I have Mike Tarnopol, who studied nutrition, been an undergrad at Cornell, CrossFitter since he was 10 years old, which is pretty cool. And he's here representing Inside Tracker, which is a personalized health analytics company founded by leading scientists, physicians, nutritionists, and exercise physiologists from MIT, Harvard, and Tufts University. The Inside Tracker platform tracks and analyzes key biochemical and physiological markers and applies sophisticated algorithms and large scientific databases to determine personalized optimal zones for each marker. So we'll be talking all about Inside Tracker and how it can help you. And of course, even if you don't go with those services, you'll be learning a lot about testing, about different numbers you may want to be looking at that you can talk to your doctor about and all that. And I just personally went through this myself, so we'll be talking about some personal things, looking at some of my weak points as far as what the blood test shows. So thanks for joining me today, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Logan. I appreciate it. Great intro, by the way. You're doing my job for me. I don't even have to talk about Inside Tracker.
Well, I pulled that off the website, so you guys did a good putting that together. It feels good.
Yeah, definitely. Yes.
So let's just talk a little bit more. There's a lot of junk out there when it comes to training and nutrition. And how do you differentiate yourself at Inside Tracker and cut through all the clutter?
Well, you kind of said it in the intro, and really what we look like kind of at first glance is a blood testing company. And don't get me wrong, that is exactly what we do. But for us, it's kind of really a means to an end. And that end point is the personalized guidance that we generate for an individual based off of those markers. You know, so if you go to your physician, and how often do you get blood work done? For an average individual, let's say maybe once or twice a year, what do you do with that data? What does it mean? And what kind of action plan can you actually get from there? So there's a lot of companies out there that'll do genetic testing or that'll do blood testing like we do, or we'll look at some other, data testing variables, but kind of stops there. And, that's all well and good. Except for you pay a lot of money to get those things done. And the gold mine is how do you, actually do anything with that data. So what we're able to do is say, okay, now you've tested with us. We have your biomarkers. We want to know a few more things about you. We want to look at what does your physical activity look like? What kind of training are you doing? Or are you just kind of a hobby jogger? Either way, we'd like to know. We get pretty specific with that too. What's the relative time domain of your workout, the intensity, if you're tracking heart rate data, things along those lines. Then we want to look at your food frequency and your dietary pattern. What are you eating and how much of that and then how often? For example, are you eating fish once or twice a month or a couple times a day or something in between? And then if you're taking supplements, we also want to know, again, what you're taking, how much, and how often. And then we go ahead and take a look at your goals. Are your goals to prevent injuries, speed up recovery? Are they to fight aging? Are they to reduce inflammation or build strength and power? Something along those lines. And once your results come in, we can say, okay, based on the 20,000 things you could probably do tomorrow for your health, here are the 20 interventions across nutrition, supplement, exercise, and lifestyle categories that are going to help optimize your biomarkers the most and help you achieve that goal, whether it be the wellness goal or an aesthetic goal or a performance goal. So for us, it's that recommendations that, really differentiate us in this whole kind of quantified self market, so to speak.
Right, because I've done other tests before, and you kind of you get this piece of paper or something with the results, and he's like, I don't know what any of these mean. You know, sometimes there's reference ranges included, but even with that, you're really not, is this really optimal, or where's this reference coming from? So you guys are going a step beyond that, right?
Yeah, we're definitely going a step beyond that. And, you know, we're a team of registered dietitians, you know, MDs and PhDs. And really our goal is to kind of sift through all the bullshit bro science that's out there and, you know, give individuals an evidence-based action plan. And all of our recommendations, therefore, you know, we're pulling from peer-reviewed scientific literature. We have a database of over 1,600 publications that we've all read, you know, individually, and kind of interpreted and generate recommendations from that. So we can, you know, tag pretty specifically to an individual, you know, what is going to work for them, all things considered from their current nutrition, their current lifestyle, their current supplementation. Yeah.
Very cool. First of all, Inside Tracker offers a whole bunch of different types of tests. So yeah. One of the things that I guess stops a lot of people is, well, the cost of testing. So maybe you can talk to that, but also, you know, the convenience of testing, right? So is it ordered by a doctor? How does that work? Yeah. And there's some tests that can be done at home, right, versus what requires you going into a lab.
There is, yes. So to kind of break that down, we do offer a variety of plans, and they range from $99 to $499. And really the only difference between them being how many biomarkers are tested in each plan. You know, the more biomarkers we test, the more expensive it is, just kind of plain and simple. But what that allows us to do is have a little bit more insight into what's going on biochemically. When we have a little bit more biomarkers. So, for example, let's say, you know, somebody has low testosterone. That in and of itself could come from a whole slew of different areas. You know, it can come from training. It could come from nutrition. It can come from poor sleep. And, you know, we'll certainly give recommendations based on that of what we might think may be occurring. But, you know, if we know that your testosterone is low, and then we have a bunch of related markers, let's say we're looking at your SHBG, your free testosterone, maybe some cortisol levels, creatine kinase, and we still know how you've been training because you told us, you know how you've been eating because you told us, and we know how you're supplementing, now we have a much more clear or a little bit more clear picture as to where that low testosterone might be coming from. So the recommendations that we can generate are of a much higher level of specificity. You know, so that's really kind of the difference between each plan. That's not to say that the most expensive plan is the best for everybody. It really depends on what your goals are. You know, are your goals optimizing your performance, or are they overall health? Something along those lines. And each plan kind of has a different angle or a different target that it's trying to hit, you know, for those different goals. The way the testing works is there's kind of two options. The first is you purchase a plan through us online, and then we, you know, get you to fill out your profile, go over all the frequency data that I just touched on, and then we generate a PDF lab slip. You just download it and print it and take that with your photo ID to the closest Quest location to you. We partner with a company called Quest Diagnostics, and they're a national, very reputable company. And you'll show up there. Most of them accept walk-ins. You'll give them the lab slip, the photo ID, and normally it takes about 10 minutes total for the whole process. And you'll get your blood results back within 3 to 5 days. We'll send you an email saying your results are in, log back into your profile, and your analysis and recommendations will be all ready to go. The second way is we can send a mobile phlebotomist to you. Now, there are some states where this is a requirement just due to some state laws. Those states are New York, New Jersey, Rhode Island, Maine, North Dakota, and South Dakota. Those states are a little more strict with how individuals have access to their own health data. And you just can't walk into a Quest Diagnostics like you can in, you know, our other states where that's kind of the primary option. So we'll send a phlebotomist, to you. It could be at your work, it could be at your office, it could be at your gym, Hell, if you want to do it at a local coffee shop and you don't piss too many people off, you can do it there too. So, you know, once the phlebotomist gets there and draws the blood, it's the same process. They'll have your lab slip and everything set up already. They'll confirm directly with you over the phone, the date and time. And then once they draw the blood again, it'll be 3 to 5 days. And once the results are up, you'll get an email, the same as the first option. Mm-hmm. So you can do the mobile phlebotomy option in any state. But again, those states that I mentioned are a necessary evil, so to speak. And that is also an additional $80 fee.
I was thinking about doing that because I was imagining there wouldn't be a place that close. So I was like, yeah, that's probably worth it. But then I found there was a Quest Diagnostics like only about 10-15 minutes away from my house. So
yeah.
They're kind of everywhere, aren't they?
That is a good point that I definitely should have mentioned. there are a few dead zones, and if that happens, that we could certainly work with individuals kind of more on an individual basis if they contact me directly. But their coverage is nationwide, and it's pretty strong. In most states, you'd be hard-pressed to not find one within, 10 to 15 minutes of your house, as you just said. So they are everywhere, and it is pretty convenient, given the fact that they do accept walk-ins. In most locations, you can just, go ahead, show up at 8 a.m. when they open. You'll likely be the first one there, and you'll be in and out in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely the primary choice, if you can do it, and if it's feasible, just from a kind of cost perspective.
Right. And what about some of the in-home tests? What can be done? What doesn't need a phlebotomist involved?
So we have two testing options that you can do at home. And both of them are a finger prick. We have the basic version, and then we also have the advanced home kit. The difference between the two is the advanced just has cortisol, high-sensitivity C-reactive protein, which is kind of a global measure of inflammation in your body. It doesn't necessarily pinpoint where inflammation may be coming from, but it tells you that it is there, as well as vitamin D. And so the basic really only includes glucose, cholesterol, LDL, HDL, and triglycerides, which are all energy and metabolism markers, and will give you a good idea of how optimized or not your metabolism is. And the advanced include those as well, plus the additional few. And the way that process works is, again, you purchase the test through us online, and then we would ship the kit to you, and then you would ship the results back to our lab, which is, again, a partner of Quest. Those are the ones that are analyzing the blood itself. And then we will analyze the actual results. The price point there, the basic would be $109 and the advanced would be $299. I don't know if you have any international listeners, but the advanced plan is available worldwide.
Okay, that's good to know. Well, let's start diving into some more details about the biomarkers. You guys also have something called Inner Age. Maybe describe that, and what are the five biomarkers that make that up?
Yeah, so kind of briefly, Inner Age is a nice, kind of either one introductory service or two an add-on service that measures five key biomarkers that kind of our science team has feels are most directly related to aging and longevity, but also on the flip side of that, can be modulated through some sort of nutrition, supplement, lifestyle, or exercise intervention. So that's how we generate which ones are most pertinent. And then from there, based on those five biomarkers, we can calculate your inner age, or your biological age, versus your chronological age. So just like a car, age is certainly one consideration if you're buying a used car, but mileage is also kind of what's most telling, how much wear and tear is on the vehicle, how much work you might have to put into it. So, you know, really what it is kind of as we move from analyzing individual biomarkers in the blood, we need some sort of summary tool where you can have a number that reflects the current state of health and performance as we move into, you know, trying to be truly data-driven. It's just another kind of objective measure for an individual to use to kind of simplistically look at, okay, here are the interventions I'm following, and here is how my inner age is trending over time. So the biomarkers that we look for in this plan are glucose, vitamin D, testosterone, hsCRP, and ALT. That's for the male panel. For the female panel, instead of testosterone, we look at DHEAS. And don't get me wrong, testosterone is definitely important for females as well as males. But the levels that are in that females, you know, the normal ranges are so low that it's hard to for kind of our algorithm to take a look at small changes that might be made over time by following these interventions. So instead, we look at DHEAS for women, which is a precursor to sex hormones, including testosterone as well as estrogen. Mm-hmm. So we'll look at those as a predictor for women for longevity. So those are the biomarkers that, you know, it assesses. But again, what we're doing here at Inside Tracker is saying, okay, now that we have this data, what does it mean? So we put the number on it, which is, you know, an objective form for you to measure, you know, what's really going on in your body, your biological clock versus the number on your driver's license. But then also, what we're doing is providing you with simplistic input. You know, what we want to do is make sure that we can provide you with some action plan by, you know, kind of extracting all the complexity from science and then presenting it in some sort of elegant form that, you know, is a great target goal for every individual, not just the elite athlete, but anybody looking to make progress. And the way we do that is with personalized focus foods. It's kind of our tagline, or what we call them. You can kind of think of like superfoods and the notion that superfoods are healthy because they have, you know, antioxidants, vitamins, and minerals, and fiber, et cetera. And so they can kind of label as healthy for the population as a whole. So what we've done is said, okay, the focus foods that we're going to generate for you are the five most potent food options that are going to deliver kind of the most nutritional bang for your buck in terms of, you know, they are going to have the largest magnitude of effect on the biomarkers that are related to your inner age and are based on their micro and macronutrient profile are going to drive them in the positive direction so you can lower your inner age, you know, as far as possible. And, you know, by doing so, what you're doing is, you know, improving and furthering your health is the general idea behind the InnerAge product.
Very cool. I haven't got my score back on that, so I'll be curious to see how that is. But I thought it was interesting also just cruising through your website. One of the blog posts on there, a recent one, was how Burning Man aged me 21 years, which I thought was very interesting. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I could. So, you know, what we often see a lot of the time is that, you know, when individuals get their, you know, results back for the first time, they're often, let's say, less than satisfied with the results, and me included. You know, with the nutritional background that I do have, you know, from you know, 6+ years of studying it, and, you know, now a few weird years of working with it directly, kind of in the field with athletes and everyday individuals, I thought that, hell, I probably have a good amount of knowledge on, and, you know, what's going on inside of my body. And when I got my results back, at the time I was 23, but I tested at 31. So that's kind of, you know, a shocker, as is for, you know, any individual to be like, hey, I'm tested, you know, for almost, you know, 8 years. older than I actually am. And it just goes to speak to, these endpoints, these physiological markers of how we're actually doing with our health are very hard to predict without actually seeing them. You know, if I told you that I was eating brown rice, chicken breast, and broccoli every day, you'd probably tell me, hey, that sounds pretty healthy, pretty clean, whatever your definition of that may be. But maybe for me, what I needed to be doing was eating more cod, more whole wheat pasta, and more spinach. Also very clean, quote unquote, very healthy. But the micronutrient profile is just that much different to have more effect for me, you know, on the biomarkers that were off, given my current training, given my current lifestyle, things along those lines. So with that being said, what you're looking for more with the inner age versus just a single testing point in time is that trend line, over multiple tests. What you're able to do and what Inside Tracker or inner age itself also provides is graphs for you to trend your inner age versus your chronological age. So you might have a good test and stay on point for a few tests, and then you might fall off and have a poor testing result. But what we want to see over time is a positive trend line, an absolute positive trend in the right direction there, in the quote-unquote, race against time, to avoid the cheesy line there. it's true. So sometimes we definitely pull ahead and become eternally younger, and sometimes we fail. But, it doesn't end there. And with Aaron's results, it's kind of one end of the extreme, right? We can only imagine the physical toll that something like Burning Man has on you as an individual. But it's highly likely that a few weeks down the road, when she retests, her inner age will be back to where it was originally, if not younger again. And it's all about knowing that, and how quickly can she apply some of the nutrition, some of the lifestyle, some of the exercise recommendations, that come with her regular Inside Tracker profile, and then, of course, the focus foods that you get with the inner age add-on to kind of decrease the time it takes for her to return to baseline. That's the same thing. Let's say somebody did an intense couple weeks of training. That's going to have a pretty significant impact on your biomarkers, and it's not necessarily a negative, but keeping in mind how it did affect you, now we know, okay, what new things should you be doing for your nutrition, and then can we tinker with your training a little bit to kind of keep you performing at that high level, given the fact that you just, wrecked yourself the previous 4 weeks. So it's really looking at that map over time and making adjustments and changes from there.
Right. Yeah, I think it's very important that people see aging as a process, right? So if you're doing certain things that are just additionally stressing your body beyond normal, then that is going to accelerate the aging process. But if you're doing things well, then you can slow down, perhaps even reverse that aging process. I'm curious, with the recommendations that are being made, how big of shifts in these biomarkers can people see and how quickly?
That's a good question. So really, that is both individual dependent as well as biomarker dependent. Mm-hmm. And different biomarkers are affected more strongly by different categories of recommendations than the others. For example, training affects testosterone a little bit more quickly than nutrition does. Is nutrition important? Definitely. But you might see day-to-day swings in testosterone levels, all things considered, from a training perspective, than you would from, let's say, you've got a little less zinc in your diet, one day to the next. You're not really going to see a large swing there. For certain markers, nutritional ones, to kind of see a large kind of a baseline improvement, normally it's 2 to 3 months, which is no coincidence as to why we recommend quarterly testing. One, to generate that map, and two, to really see the effects of those nutritional and lifestyle changes that take effect after 2 to 3 months. Now, with the kind of strength and endurance markers, you will see changes a little more quickly. And again, that's why it's very important to test over time. You know, you could test right after coming off of a pretty intense week of training. Maybe your testosterone is a little bit low from that. You can think of testosterone kind of as a gas tank. If driving or putting your foot on the gas for a car drains the gas tank, then continually working out hard drains your testosterone tank. As you recover with proper rest or proper recovery, things like active recovery days, things along those lines, proper nutrition, then your testosterone will come back. But if you don't do that correctly, then you're going to compound the effects and you're going to end up with slightly depleted levels of testosterone. However, a week later, if now you decide that you're going to recover properly, your testosterone levels might come up. So over time, what we want to see is either one, levels that stay the same, or levels that improve, but we definitely don't want that MAP to decrease. So we kind of cover all angles there from all biomarker perspective by testing quarterly. And some of our elite athletes do test more than that. I work with a few individuals across a variety of different sports, but for example, I work with a couple of CrossFitters who will test quarterly as baseline tests, and then they will drop blood tests right around any sort of time they're trying to test their training and their performance. So let's say they're running a quick CrossFit competition, they might drop a blood test right in after that. Or if they're doing a test to measure their aerobic capacity or look at their strength and power improvements, then I might drop a test in after that. And that just is adding another objective data point in to say, okay, here's how their biomarkers look. Here's how they feel subjectively with their training data. Here's how they're actually improving on their performance tests. And let's look at all things considered. So I definitely got a little off track there, but sometimes excited.
Yeah. That's good. So we were talking a little bit about this before, but as I mentioned, I just got my results back, and I'm happy to report that as far as the blood tests that I've done, my total testosterone was the highest it's ever been, at 782 nanograms per deciliter. But something I have right now, and I've seen this in the past, is my sex hormone binding globulin is pretty high. Now, not a lot of people are familiar with that, but basically the name kind of says it's sex hormone binding globulin, so it's a globulin, a protein that binds to things like testosterone, but other androgens and estrogens as well. It basically renders them inert. So could you talk about sex hormone binding globulin and what are some lifestyle or nutrition training factors that may be causing that to be high in me and what I can do about it?
Yeah. So yeah, you're definitely on track. Sex hormone binding globulin definitely got its name for its ability to bind sex hormones, testosterone and estrogen-like compounds in the bloodstream. And it binds it with a pretty high affinity. The bond is very strong between them. Testosterone also binds other products in the blood as well, but the bind is less strong. So what we look for here and why we're looking at it is because, one theory, and this works up into, kind of a certain point, is that when SHBG is bound to testosterone, that makes it not bioavailable, not readily available for testosterone to, be able to,
exert its effects.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah, so yeah, it can't bind to the androgen receptor sites if it's bound up by sex hormone binding globulin.
Exactly. So it's not going to be available to do that anabolic reaction, whether it be bone and muscle health, health or protein synthesis, or sometimes it's related to endurance and hemoglobin as well. So it's just not going to be available for those reactions. And that's certainly the case up until a specific point. What we have found with some more research is that some tissues also have SHBG receptors. So up until a certain point, of an SHBG level, they might actually kind of improve the absorption of testosterone in a tissue-specific manner. And this is kind of newer emerging research. The testosterone being not bioavailable because of its, you know, bound state to SHBG was something that was found out through research in like the 1980s or so. And they did tests in test tubes. And they used kind of random cells, whatever they were able to get a hold of at the time. And those cells happened to not have SHBG receptors on them. So when testosterone was bound to SHBG, it couldn't perfuse into the cell. So therefore, the extrapolation was made that, you know, if it's bound to the bloodstream, that it's not going to make its way through the bloodstream and perfuse into the cellular tissues for those metabolic or anabolic reactions. And that is the case still. So, you know, now that I've muddied the waters, what does that actually mean? Well, again, it goes back to testing over time. So things that you have to keep into account are, okay, what does the SHBG look like for you at baseline? How do you establish that baseline? And then what happens over time as you either, one, change your training, or two, take a look at your nutrition? And what we want to see is, okay, it's maybe slightly elevated, as yours is. It's not too high to where we wouldn't be like, oh, whoa, you know, you could have done a couple endurance workouts for your, you know, higher level, which is 63, by the way, and kind of a cutoff for clinically okay is 50. So it's not too high. And let's say you were doing, you know, 2 weeks of increased endurance volume for you. This is something that we definitely could see happen. We could definitely also see it happen from a nutritional perspective. If you've lost any weight significantly recently, and we're talking kind of a half pound of the muscle, it's very minuscule. We'll see SHBG rise there as well. Or if you're kind of on the same lines, a little bit calorically restricted, can cause SHBG to go high. But what we want to do is kind of keep it stabilized. You know, keep it in a stabilized zone for you. So I wouldn't be worried if, you know, your SHBG on your next test kind of trends downward a little bit. Even if it's still relatively high, that's okay. Because, again, we're looking for over time, what does, you know, the trend look like. And if it's trending downwards, then we're fine. If it's staying the same, we're still kind of okay. We just need to take a look at what you're doing training-wise and making sure that your caloric intake and your protein intake are on par. And if it goes up, then we need to take a step back and definitely reconsider, okay, what are you doing? You know, are you doing too many metcons and then going out for long runs afterwards? Things along those lines. Can we say, okay, instead of doing a metcon, today you're going to, you know, maybe do some maximal lifts or maybe some heavier kettlebell work and then still go for that run. But maybe it's the combination of metcons and a run that's causing it to rise. You know, maybe you're not sleeping well enough. Things along those lines, we can start to tease out over time where exactly it's coming from. But again, you need those multiple testing points to start to really delve into it.
Right. Very useful. I had not heard about the sex hormone binding globulin receptors. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's hard because there's a lot of things that go into you know, SHBG and what we know and what we do know and don't know about it. But there is a good amount of you know, research that there's a multitude of different functions SHBG has that's, you know, kind of compounds the results more so than just simply saying, hey, you know, testosterone is not available now. That's certainly the case, but there's also a lot of other things that we can have to consider when we're looking at, you know, different fluctuations of this biomarker in context of everything that you're doing. You know, if Joe has an SHBG level of 50 and Jeff has one of 30, and both have the same plasma testosterone concentration, that doesn't necessarily mean that Jeff is better off because of his higher free testosterone. You know, That's because tissue-specific distribution of the SHBG definitely matters. So you have to look at, what is Jeff doing and what is Joe doing? Because, they could be equally as good off, or Jeff could be better than Joe, even though he has a slightly lower SHBG level.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that brings up an interesting point. So our science is ever evolving, and things that we know for sure now, we'll figure out we're wrong 10 years from now, as has happened in the past. So maybe when you're working with people, because you talked about it's all looking at science, and that's something, we do at Lost Empire Herbs as well, but there's not always complete science available on something. For example, our number one supplement, pine pollen, supplies androgens to the body, really helps with that, but there's really no science behind it, not yet. Hopefully someday we'll get there. So how do you kind of balance looking at the science to see what's kind of proven or highly suggested that it works versus maybe trying some stuff that isn't necessarily backed by science?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting valid point or argument. And it really comes down to these days, how do you interpret the science? And how do you interpret things that work? From our recommendations perspective, everything has, we're looking at a multitude of different factors to determine, whether something is, we feel strongly backed by science or not. First of all, if it's not, then it's not a recommendation of ours, so we don't put it in. Second, we're looking at things like how reputable the journal is, that the article or the study was published in, what type of study is it, how many individuals were enrolled in the study, what were the what were the outcomes, what were the intended outcomes, who were the authors behind the study. All these things are going in, how many studies there are behind this specific recommendation are going into how strongly we feel or the strength of evidence behind it is. So that's one perspective. And of course, those are getting tagged to individuals based on things we know about them, et cetera. So it's just their age, their weight, their height, whether they're doing CrossFit or whether they're doing some endurance running, or maybe they're a triathlete or maybe they're a rower. Those are all being tagged to different individuals. But that also begs the question, okay, somebody comes to me and says, I want to do intermittent fasting. Research on that is still definitely muddy, whether or not it's beneficial or not. And I don't necessarily have an opinion on it yet. And more evidence is definitely suggesting that it might be beneficial in terms of kind of overall health and wellness and lowering blood glucose levels, lowering LDL levels, improving lipid panels. But in terms of athletic performance, on the other hand, we're not exactly, there's no consensus statement. But I say, okay, this is an individual that wants to try this. Let's go ahead and see if it works. And if their blood glucose improves and their lipid panels improves from a biomarker perspective, that's great. And then I'm going to subjectively ask, how are you feeling on this, new dietary plan? Let's make sure you're doing it correctly. And if your performance is improving and you feel good and your biomarkers are in line, then great. This is what works for you as an individual right now. Given your current training, given your current lifestyle, this is what's going to work for you. And it all comes down to the interpretation of science. You might take a look at a consensus statement that's published off of some peer-reviewed scientific literature off of their, aggregate data. So taking a look and saying, hey, we're publishing this, paper based off of an average. We took 60 people and applied some sort of intervention, and 40 of them had no response to the intervention. So therefore, we say, okay, this intervention has no response. But you can't ignore the fact that maybe the other 20 people had a high response. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, their demographics or their metrics or whatever it is, given the study, that group of individuals does respond to that intervention. So maybe when I'm talking to an individual over the phone, or maybe they want to look at their results in a little bit more detail, and I can gather that, hey, they might be an individual in that group. So it's definitely important to consider, even though the consensus statement says X, maybe they're a part of Y, and I got to make sure that I implement Z correctly. given those factors.
That's the important reason to, you know, not just test one time, because, you know, that might be useful to some degree, but it's really the trends, and you can see how interventions, whether science-based or not, you know, how those affect everything that you're doing.
Of course, yeah, 100%. It's all about the retesting, definitely.
Right. Right. So another thing that came up on my test, which is very interesting, is my ferritin levels are a bit high. And I was just hearing about this actually from Dr. Mercola at a conference that I was at. He was talking about, the dangers of having too much iron in the blood and actually recommending that people either give blood or something I hadn't heard of before, but a therapeutic phlebotomy. So can you talk about the issues with iron a bit?
Yeah, sure. So taking a look at your blood results, the ferritin is a little bit elevated. Now, I definitely wouldn't say it's high. And here's the distinction we have to make really quickly when you're interpreting our results, is what we've done is generated an optimized zone for you as an individual based on, everything we know about you, again. So when you're looking at it, there's a red zone, and that's kind of what we classify as at risk. And that's different. That's explaining, if your blood result is outside of a clinically acceptable range. You know, if you go to a doctor, they're going to have an issue with an at-risk result. For us, then, the yellow, which is still outside of your quote-unquote optimized zone, so it appears as high for you, is clinically okay. So from a chronic disease or acute illness perspective, you're medically good to go. Now, from a completely optimized you and, making you kind of the healthiest version of yourself that you can be, that's a little bit elevated. But there is that differentiation between elevated and actually high.
Right.
So,
let me just interject this. I'll be actually like sharing some of these charts and different things on our website, either along with this podcast, so you can check that out in the show notes, or as a sort of separate article. But of the markers tested, I had 29 optimized, 9 need work, so this is in that yellow zone, and 3 were at risk in that red zone. Go on.
Yeah, no, great. So, for you with that slightly elevated ferritin, I mean, we talked about this a little bit before coming on. It just sounds like you're getting a lot of red meat. Red meat is very high in iron. So what ferritin is it's the storage protein for iron, because you're right, it is dangerous and poisonous to have iron in kind of free and by itself in your bloodstream. Outside of an okay zone, let's clarify there. So it's acceptable within a certain limit. So what your body does is, as it has enough iron in the blood, it stores it with this protein called ferritin. The more iron that you take in, the more your body is going to try to store it as ferritin. So that's really kind of what it looks like from that perspective. And then if you take a look at your blood iron, again, it's a little bit elevated. Your transferrin saturation is also a little bit high. So there's a protein called transferritin, which is available in the bloodstream, and that's your body's attempt to keep iron kind of bound to something and how it transports it through the bloodstream so it's not available by itself as kind of a free radical. And which would be kind of poisonous to your system in the bloodstream. So it transports it from the storage in your organs as ferritin, and then transfers that to the protein transferrin and moves it through your bloodstream to whatever target tissue it needs to be going to. So again, your levels are elevated, but they're not too high. Simple recommendations, simple fix would be to eat 1 or 2 less servings of red meat a week than you're eating now. And, even replacing it with another meat source like chicken, you're going to see a trend in the positive direction there in terms of decreasing your ferritin storage and then decreasing your blood iron levels down into your optimized zone. Really what we're looking for from an inside tracker perspective there is taking a look at your oxygenation and performance markers. We're really trying to tinker, you know, how well is your body able to deliver oxygen to different parts of your tissues. So what does iron have to do with that? Well, iron is very important in the formation of hemoglobin. And hemoglobin is a protein that's found in your red blood cells. And at the center of that is an iron molecule, and that's where oxygen binds. So everybody knows that, you know, red blood cells are important for oxygenation, and this is why. So without proper iron stores, eventually you won't be able to produce hemoglobin in you know, significant amounts, and you'll see a performance decrease. And that's what we're trying to optimize by getting your iron levels in that optimized zone.
Okay. So if I did work on this, should it help to improve my endurance a little bit better?
Yeah, it should. We've seen high iron levels definitely correlate to kind of a chronic fatigue feeling, and decreasing the time it takes to get to exhaustion, which is definitely not something that we want from a performance perspective. I would definitely think that, you know, decreasing your iron stores a little bit would help. The quick way to do that, yes, would be to go to to give blood, or what was the wording you used for the second option? I like that.
Therapeutic phlebotomy. So if they can't use your blood for whatever reason, they can just draw the blood and then basically toss it.
I got
it. I'd never heard that term either. Thought it was interesting.
Because the only way that you're really going to get rid of the iron in your body, your body's very good at recycling iron. So the way that it normally gets excreted would be through some sort of bleeding action.
This is one of the reasons that women are theorized to live a little bit longer than men, is because they do monthly bleed, and so they're actually discharging some of that iron, whereas men tend not to bleed, unless, you know, you get in a sword fight pretty often.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true. And, you know, and then you get into, different sports have a larger and smaller effect on that. You know, a lot of the endurance athletes, you know, obviously for the same reason you just mentioned for women, but, you know, for men, as you're running, for example, you know, over a longer period of time, you get a little bit more gastrointestinal bleeding, just from the sheer rubbing and bouncing and running that has on your effect on your organs. You'll see a little bit lower levels of iron in those endurance athletes. So again, you really have to take into account, what are you doing as an individual to see, you know, do you need to take iron into account in terms of, should you be getting a little bit more, or should you be mindful of, hey, you know, I'm eating red meat every day, I'm probably getting a good amount of iron, I might be able to cut back the amount of red meat I'm eating from an iron perspective. And, if you were to do that, what you might also see is a decrease in your blood fasting glucose levels. High consumption of red meat has been correlated to high levels of fasting blood glucose. And then as well, you'll see your LDL cholesterol likely lower a little bit, just due to the amount of saturated fat that's in red meats. And saturated fat raises blood cholesterol, blood LDL cholesterol levels.
Mm-hmm. So one of the other things, and running low on time, so I'll go into this pretty quickly, but you recently added CBC, or complete blood count, to your panels. Can you talk a little bit about this and why it's important?
Yeah, definitely. The CBC, and we kind of get into this with the iron, but the CBC is definitely one of the most common ordered blood panels by your doctor. They'll likely send it to you to get your CBC done when they think that you might be anemic. Maybe you're extremely tired all the time. Maybe you're a female. And so they might send you there to get that done. They might also send you to get one if they suspect you have some sort of an infection or maybe a clotting problem. But what it does is it measures a good amount of biomarkers that can reveal a lot about your health and performance. It shows how efficiently oxygen is carried throughout your body. It shows how healthy your oxygen-carrying blood cells are, your red blood cells. It can expose some inflammation issues if you have any. It can explain why you might have low iron levels, like we just teased out a little bit. And it can also tell you if you have a little bit higher risk for poor cardiovascular health. Things that are actually measuring, if I was to run through them off the top of my head, you're looking at things like hemoglobin, hematocrit, red blood cell counts, and what those red blood cells actually look like, how big and how small they are, which have different effects on how healthy they are, how much hemoglobin is actually in each cell. What does your white blood cell count look like total? And then what does each certain type of white blood cell count look like? Knowing those different levels, you can start to tease out whether, you have low white blood cells because of more of a training thing. Maybe you increase your training load, which has been shown to decrease some of your white blood cell counts. Maybe you have a viral infection versus a bacterial infection or vice versa. And you can kind of tease out all these things with this additional CBC that we now have added to our ultimate plan.
Nice. And speaking about the white blood cells, it makes sense. If it's too low, then you have bad immunity, and it's too high, then there's just too much infection or inflammation or different things that your body is fighting. So my white blood cell count came in a little bit low. Basically, the optimal zone borders the too low zone, and I'm just barely into that too low zone. So what are the things that may be causing that, and what would be useful? So you just mentioned overtraining is one thing that could lead to that. So perhaps my volume of work had been a little bit high. What else there?
Yeah, well, for the neutrophils, which is the only white blood cell for you that happens to be a little bit low, they are the, well, first of all, they make up the majority of white blood cells, or that total, roughly around 70 to 75% of our total white blood cell count are neutrophils, and their primary job are responders to bacterial infections. So they can be triggered high from emotional and physical stress in addition to bacterial infections. But on the other side, lower neutrophil numbers can often be seen in viral infections, or again, as an adaptation to, harder training volumes and training loads. You mentioned that you were recently in the Amazon and had a cough, that could have definitely been a viral infection. Same as if you had recently been upping your training over the past, let's say, month or two, pretty long time point there, that could also be affecting it as well. Definitely a possibility.
Nice. Well, so many more questions we could go into, but I know you got another appointment, and so do I in a short bit. So I'd like to say, anyone that's interested in this, if you head to insidetracker.com, and what's more, we have a coupon for you, so you can save, I believe it's 10% off any test. Is that right?
Yep, it's 10% off any test. If they have any questions, they can feel free to reach out to me directly. As well, I can help answer the questions and get them set up with the test that's definitely best for them, given their goals. If this goes on your website, you can definitely put my email up there, and they can shoot me any questions they have.
Okay, absolutely. Yeah, so to get that 10% off, once again, go to insidetracker.com and use the coupon code LostEmpire, and I believe that's all as one word with no space in there. And if you head to the show notes, we'll actually have the link that kind of automatically puts that coupon in there just to make it a little bit easier for you. We'll have Mike's contact information. As he said, any other questions you have on this? I think it's a really cool service, so I know a lot of people are interested in getting healthier, right? Who isn't interested in that? Really, everyone should be interested. So this is just one option that can certainly help you along those ways. I'm having fun digging into the sport, and I hope you enjoyed and got something out of this call, you know, kind of hearing me get a consultation about my results a little bit here. I hope you found that interesting. If you have any questions, feel free to ask. And just want to say thank you, Mike. This was great.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. I always love talking about this sort of stuff, and there's always so much to talk about in so little time.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. Once again, post any questions you have, but hopefully you'll find this useful, and you'll be able to find more information. And as I said, I will be posting some more of my results on the website so you can take a look. All right, thanks, everyone.